ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। On this 14th day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 12. 412. Kankshanta Karmanang Siddhim. Yajanti hi devata chipram hi manushi loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. Men in this world desire success and fruitive activities, and therefore they worship the demigods. Quickly, of course, men get results from fruitive work in this world. Purport. There is a great misconception about the gods or demigods of this material world. And men of less intelligence, although passing as great scholars, take these demigods to be various forms of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the demigods are not different forms of God, but they are God's different parts and parcels. God is one, and the parts and parcels are many. The Vedas say, Nityo Nityanam, God is one. Ishvara Parama Krishna, the Supreme God is one, Krishna, and the demigods are delegated with powers to manage this material world. These demigods are all living entities, Nityanam, with different grades of material power. They cannot be equal to the Supreme God, Narayan, Vishnu, or Krishna. Anyone who thinks that God and the demigods are on the same level is called an atheist, or Pashandi. Even the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva cannot be compared to the Supreme Lord. In fact, the Lord is worshipped by demigods such as Brahma and Shiva. Shiva Virinchi Nutam. Yet, curiously enough, there are many human leaders who are worshipped by foolish men under the misunderstanding of anthropomorphism or zoomorphism. Ihadevata denotes a powerful man or demigod of this material world. But Narayan, Vishnu, or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, does not belong to this world. He is above, or transcendental to, material creation. Even Sripad Shankaracharya, the leader of the impersonalists, maintains that Narayan, or Krishna, is beyond this material creation. Excuse me. However, foolish people, Rita Gana, worship the demigods because they want immediate results. They get results, but do not know that results so obtained are temporary and are meant for less intelligent persons. The intelligent person is in Krishna consciousness, and he has no need to worship the paltry demigods for some immediate temporary benefit. The demigods of this material world, as well as their worshippers, will vanish with the annihilation of this material world. The boons of the demigods are material and temporary. Both the material worlds and their inhabitants, including the demigods and their worshippers, are bubbles in the cosmic ocean. In this world, however, human society is mad after temporary things, such as the material opulence of possessing land, family, and enjoyable paraphernalia. To achieve such temporary things, people worship the demigods or powerful men in human society. If a man gets some ministership in the government by worshiping a political leader, he considers that he has achieved a great boon. All of them are therefore kowtowing to the so-called leaders or big guns in order to achieve temporary boons, and they indeed achieve such things. Such foolish men are not interested in Krishna consciousness for the permanent solution to the hardships of material existence. They are all after sense enjoyment, and to get a little facility for sense enjoyment, they are attracted to worshiping empowered living entities known as demigods. This verse indicates that people are rarely interested in Krishna consciousness. They are mostly interested in material enjoyment, and therefore they worship some powerful living entity. ओम ज्ञानचिमदान्तस्य ज्ञानान्दन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, a fair amount of the Bhagavad Gita is dedicated to disabusing the listener, Arjuna, and through him, all of us, of the need to worship anyone else besides Krishna. Right in the second chapter, Krishna says that he has yami mam pushpidam vacham pavadam ca vipashyata, that those who are not very wise, they may study the Vedas, but they think that the flowery words of the Vedas describing the higher planets and boons that you can get by worshiping the demigods are the real purpose of the Vedas. That's all there is. And these sections of the Vedas, they prescribe various elaborate sacrifices by which one can worship these gods and attain these higher planets or some good result in this planet. But Krishna says these are called Vedavadarata, Vedavadarata, which means so-called knowers of the Vedas, not real knowers of the Vedas. And then after that, this is in the context of he's praising this one-pointed attention, the vivasayatmaka buddhi, to serving him. This is really what's necessary. Otherwise, your attention is all over the place. Different gods, different goals, different aspects of the material energy, the pleasure and pain, the dualities of this world. So that's just in the second chapter. Now, in the third chapter, there's some mention of worshiping the gods, at least. You know, if you want to live nicely in this world, you have to recognize the higher powers. He talks about that, but basically, he's talking about the need to worship him. Yagyartart kamanonyatra. The word yagya is described as referring to Vishnu, but there is some mention in the third chapter, the previous chapter, of the need at least to recognize this cycle of sacrifice. If you worship the gods, you propitiate them, then the rain will come on time and you'll be able to eat, you know. But then he also talks about how ultimately these sacrifices are situated in the Supreme, and therefore he's the ultimate lord of all sacrifices, as we understand. Now here, we've just got to the section, this kind of distinct section here of describing the appearance and the of the science of Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning, in the first three verses, through the process of the cyclic succession, why Krishna comes periodically to renew that cyclic succession, to revive the teachings as they are, because by nature, by the force of time, these teachings get distorted. So he comes in order to reestablish them, protect the devotees, annihilate the miscreants. And then we heard how important it is to understand his birth, the transcendental nature of his birth and activities. Now here he has this key verse in the previous verse: "If you, as you surrender to me, you will be rewarded accordingly." Right. So, in the broadest sense, that includes every activity, because ultimately there's nothing but Krishna. There's nothing but Krishna and his energies. The demigods are also Krishna. They're part and parcel of Krishna. Right. They have they're more empowered than we are. You know, the god of the waters, of the air, Surya, Dev, Brahma, Shiva. You know, Shiva's in his own category. But whatever powers they have, whatever boons they can give, they're all coming ultimately from Krishna. This becomes very clear in the ninth chapter. So, if you surrender them, you're also surrendering to Krishna, but indirectly. If you're simply an ordinary materialist, total atheist, and you're absorbed in matter, say the scientists, you know, manipulating matter, trying to build better and better machines and so forth. They may be total atheists, but they're still worshiping Krishna through the material energy. There's nothing but Krishna's energies here. But in that indirect form, and absorbing oneself in this temporary material world, your benefits will also be temporary. Because you're completely focusing on this external temporary energy of Krishna. You see the point? So here in this verse, he says, okay, those who want immediate results, material results, they worship the gods, yajanti hi devata. And they get such results quickly. But He'll describe that ultimately, you know, these sacrifices are within the Varnashram system, and the Varnashram system comes from him. So ultimately, you still have to come back to Krishna. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada is giving some very important instructions against the worship of the demigods, because that's really what the theme of the Bhagavad Gita is. And when we come to the seventh chapter, it becomes very explicit, and even more explicit in the ninth chapter, that worship of the demigods will not get you anywhere. It will not lead you to your ultimate goal in life. It's simply a big distraction. So let's go through this purport. And Prabhupada's quoting different verses here, little pieces of them. The verse is Nityo Nityanam. This is part of a verse that's worth knowing. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yobadadati Kaman. That's actually half a verse. The rest of it is not quoted as much. But that's Prabhupada quoted it all the time. It's a Upanishadic verse. Forget which one. I think Shweta Ashwatara. So Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. It means very simply that of all the eternal conscious beings of whom we are samples, right, there's untold trillions of them. There's one eternal conscious being who is supplying the needs of all the others. Eko Bahunam Yovadadati Kaman. So therefore, why not go directly to that being who can give you your real necessities? Things that the others cannot give you. And that includes not just the demigods as we know them, Shiva, Brahma, Surya, Chandra, etc., but the powerful people of this world. You know, I, in my lifetime, I've seen so many political campaigns come and go. You know, I remember standing on the street corner in Hempstead, Long Island, handing out flyers for Adlai Stevenson. Probably, has anyone ever heard of Adlai Stevenson? You, the old timer. Yeah. He ran against Eisenhower, I think it was, for the president back in 1960. So what is all this politics business? And it doesn't take just place in, you know, the national election, the local election, the state election, all over the world. There's campaigns, you know. What's going on there? It's a type of demigod worship, you know, on a smaller scale. There's a powerful being, someone who's more charismatic, has more money, whatever it may be. And he's trying to get a position in society. And those who work for him hope that if my guy gets in, then I'll be benefited, or my class will be benefited, my social strata, whatever, my ethnic group, right? There's all of this, and all of that is a misidentification, number one, of who we really are, and number two, of what our real needs are. So this is a, you know, who worships the demigods in the United States? You know, as they, practically no one, because now we have so many Hindus who came over. But basically, it's unknown. We have that one God, Christian God, who people also worship for material things. But all of this, you know, kowtowing to the big guns, I love this, you know, phrase, Prabhupada jokes. It's all the same thing. You're trying to suck up to your boss, you're trying to get ahead here. There's always somebody with more power and money and influence that you, who you need to align yourself with in order to achieve what you think you want. And this is going on all over the world. But as Krishna says, and Prabhupada quotes, not in the Sanskrit, in this purport, he quotes chapter 7. It's very telling. I always was taken with it. Just bear with me with this little section of the 7th chapter, which I remember. So what Krishna says there, that those who are bewildered, those who are not really in knowledge, he says, kamaistaistai rita jnana. He uses that word rita jnana, right? In the phrase, if you notice. Yeah, right here in the you know, middle of the purport. He's referring to that verse. So, kaimaistaista ritigyana papadnyate anyadevata. This is the first phrase. Those whose minds are stolen away, whose knowledge is taken away by material desires of all kinds, they worship other gods than me. Krishna is putting himself in a, you know, they worship other devas besides me. And tam tam niyamam asaya prakriti anyataksvaya. They follow the certain rituals, whatever it may be. It may come from the Vedas, but it can come from somewhere else. It can come from the Bible, it can come from the Quran, it can come from, you know, some other source. But there's a certain ritual, there's a certain way of worshiping it. And so, you don't have faith in Krishna, that the Supreme Absolute Truth, that he'll supply what you need. So you're going elsewhere, right? That's the idea. So, yo-yo yam-yam tano bhakta shraddha yajita michati. Whatever and whoever you want to worship, if you know, then I'll make your faith strong in that. And you want to worship some totem pole, you know, some imagine, you know, then you really want to worship that? You come in touch with people who are worshiping. There's a philosophy behind it. It's a nice website. Then Krishna will make your faith strong. You know? And you just go on worshiping. And then whatever you might get, what is that next one? Ayoyo yanam tanam bhakta shraddha dasyata sachalam shatame varatam sataya shraddha yuktas. And then possessing that faith, you'll do the worship and you'll get some result. You see? You get some result. But you should know that whatever result you get, it's actually coming from me. But they don't know that. And then the clincher is, andavatu palam tesham tadbhavalti alpabedasam. Prabhupada also refers to that here. That one has to be of small mind, really, to worship these other gods for these temporary boons. Because antavat, we're eternal. What good are the temporary boons going to do us? You know? In other words, we need permanent boons, like liberation, you know, return, you know, freedom from birth and death, return to the eternal world, never again to return here. Any place you got to return from, any place you're going to come back to square one, what's the use ultimately? As searchers of self-realization, transcendentalists, the first thing is to expand your mind. And to so that you're looking for the ultimate benefit, not just the immediate benefits. This is what it means, you know. This famous verse, if you'll bear with me. Yeah, chapter 4, text 12. So, there's this nice verse that Krishna speaks in the 11th canto. Labdva sudurlabhamidam bahusambhavande manushyamartadamanityamapiyadira. It says, all of us, every one of us, having attained this human form of life after many, many births, bahu sambhavante, manushyam. We have the human form, right? We're all sitting here as human beings. Now, what is the unique thing of this human form? Artadam. It can give the actual value or the need of the soul. This word arta here, in this context, means what we really need deep down inside. Not something to eat, not something material, but really the soul needs liberation. It needs to be connected back again to Krishna. We need yoga. That's what we need. So, but like all other forms, it's temporary. The clock is ticking. The sands are running down. Artadam anityam. It's anityam. Who can deny it? This body is temporary. The human form. So one has to be dhira. Here's the key word. Dhira. One has to consider all of these factors. And not be, you know, what is my ultimate goal in life? And having understood that, then turnam yateta napateta namrityavat has to use this body, which is, after all, at any moment, subject to death, anumrityavat, as long as we're alive and conscious and have our wits about it. He has to strive for what? Nikshayasa. The word nikshayasa means the ultimate good. The ultimate good, not just the temporary. Prabhupada would give us these nice little phrases. You know, Shreyas and Prayas. Let's just think of that concept now. Shreyas here, he calls Nikshreyas at the same, means the ultimate good of the soul. Okay? Liberation. Let's just call it liberation from birth and death. You know? And we know that entails, real liberation, entails rejoining Krishna in the spiritual world to lead an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. We're told again and again by the Shastra, by the Acharyas, by the realized souls, that this exists. Life is not just a, you know, as our famous philosopher, what's his name? I forget his name now, but he called life, human life, nasty, brutish, and short. You know, this is the Western philosophy. After all of their cogitation, this is what they conclude. Can't get out of it, you know? Nasty, brutish. Well, he's right in a way, you know? Dukali Bhashashvatam, right? It is nasty bhujans, but that's not all there is. That may be human life, but that's not life of the soul. There is another way of existence, right? Where it's not nasty bhujans, sure, but it's rather eternal and blissful and full of knowledge. So that's what we want to strive for. So that's Kirill Nichreya Vishaya Karla Sarvataksya. Why strive for Vishaya? Everything else is a variety of Vishaya. Vishaya means sense gratification, gross and subtle. You know, the mind can also be gratified. You know, there's all kinds of it. Because we've experienced all of that in all kinds of bodies. You know, Why puno punascha vitacha vananam? Why again and again try to chew the chewed, says Prahlad Maharaj. Right? So it's not an accident that the word vishaya is very close to the word visha, which means poison in Sanskrit. Think about it. So that's what Krishna says here. Antavatu palam tesham, the worshippers of the gods, the worshippers of the politicians, the worshippers of the boss, anyone else you worship for boons, for trying to get some, is opamedasa. You're not very intelligent. You see? Because whatever you get is temporary. And chances are it won't fulfill your aspirations anyway. So then the conclusion of all of this, lesson on why not to worship the gods, except just worship Krishna, is Devan Deviyajo Yanti Madbhakta Yanti Mamapi. Whoever you worship, you go there. And even, you know, people walk in their dogs. You know, how many people I see it all the time. They start to look like their dogs, and the dogs look like them. Is it? All the time. You know? Because that's where they're giving their affection and attention. And the dog is also giving his affection and attention. You become what you get absorbed in. It's even in the Shastra, right? The bringing, like when the wasp captures a little bee and he puts him in his nest, you know, for later prasadam taking. The bee is terrified. Terrified. And what's he thinking about? He's thinking about the wasp all the time. So when he gets killed, he becomes a wasp. Whatever you get absorbed in, that's what you become. You know? So the idea here is that Devan Devi Joyanti, you worship the demigods for boons and you focus on the demigods, you'll go there if you're fortunate. You know? But even if you go there, you still have to come back. But those who worship me come to me, says Krishna. He said, he repeats it in the ninth chapter, similarly. So here, back to our present verse, Kankshantak Kaman, Kankshantak. You know, Nishochati and the Kankshati. We're not supposed to be Kankshantak, desiring material things. But those who do worship the demigods and they get their temporary benefits. Okay, so then going on in this purport, the intelligent person is in Krishna consciousness. He has no need to worship the paltry demigods for some immediate temporary benefits. Hare Krishna. It's a noisy world. Okay. So that's basically the meaning of this purport. And we're going to read this next verse is about Varnashram. And we'll view the real purpose of Varnashram. Any questions on text number 12? Okay, let's move on. Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam.
Gunakarma vibhagasaha.
Tasya kartaram
api mam. Vidyakartaram
apiyam.
According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Purport. The Lord is the creator of everything. Everything is born of Him, everything is sustained by Him, and everything after annihilation rests in Him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called Brahmins, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the Kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and the Shudras, or laborer class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions because he is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate men from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the Brahmins. Although Brahmins, by quality, are supposed to know about Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation of Lord Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahman and reaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnav. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different plenary expansions of Krishna, namely Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to this system of the four divisions of human society, a person in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nation, or species. So, the real important lesson here is this guna karma of the Bhagavad, is that these four varnas, namely the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, should be understood according to the quality and the work, not according to the birth. This is a major point of philosophy argued by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the context of the, you know, late 19th and, the early 20th century, where in, oftentimes, simply by birth, one is thought to be a Brahmin and so forth. Well, one has a good chance of becoming a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, say, or Vaishya, born into that family, because you're in that environment and you have certain genes or whatever, karma. But it's not a sure thing. Just like one who is born as the son of a high court judge or a doctor does not necessarily become a high court judge or a doctor, respectively. But there's a fairly good chance of it. But still, Krishna says one should be known by guna and karma, by quality and activity. So what is the purpose of this varnashrama? I was just studying today in the second chapter, first canto, where the real, you know, goal of varnashrama is it's a dharma. It's varnashrama dharma. Without dharma, it's just animal society. The Prabhupada makes that point at the beginning. This purport, what is that? Pachubhya Samana. You know the word Pachubhya Samana? Ahara nidra bhayamaitanangcha samanya retat pashabhya samana dharma hitesham adhiko vishesho dharma nihina pashabhya samana. This is from the Hitopadesh. What does that Hitopadesh mean? It means instructions for the benefit of society, right? So we should understand this verse that we share with the animals four basic functions: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending or fearing. No one can deny it. They, all those things we do and they do. So what's the differentiating factor? Dharma. The dharma. Dharma means a set of rules that will take you somewhere. You know, the supreme dharma, as explained in the Bhagavad Purana, is that by which one can attain complete satisfaction. You know, there's all kinds of. I mean, you could. There's Kshatriya dharma. You know. There is Vaishya Dharma, you know, in other words, there's rules and regulations to be a really successful Kshatriya like that. But the supreme Dharma, this is Savaipunksan Paro Dharma, the ultimate Dharma, for the soul, what we share with every other soul, is that sense of loving devotional service to God. That's the Dharma of the soul, the ultimate Dharma. And unless we have a program to focus on that dharma, then whatever else we're doing is, keeping us bound in this material world. So therefore, the principle of dharma is spoken of in that second chapter, that which awakens love for Krishna, which is completely pure. It has no material motive, and it's uninterrupted. It's a very high standard. That's what Bhagavad Purana is all about. That's what this movement is all about. You know, ultimately, sarva dharma paritya jamami kankshara, that give up all these other dharmas and just make it this one thing, dharma, of surrendering wholly and solely to me. And so Bhagavad Purana begins from that. Say, dharma projitakaitava tra. In this Purana, which is the basis of this Hare Krishna movement, Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Purana, along with Bhagavad Gita, they're kicking out all the cheating dharmas. In other words, dharma doesn't necessarily have to be genuine. It can be a false thing. You know, ku dharma, upa dharma. These are spoken of in the seventh canto. So any kind of so-called religion or dharma that you practice for material benefit is said to be kaitava dharma, because it's just going to keep you bound in this world. Even if you worship Krishna for material means, that's not ultimately going to help you. You have to graduate from that. If you're really sincere in that, Krishna will take away your desire for material things and give you himself. But in any case, he says here that the real dharma is that which awakens pure devotion to Krishna. Then where does varnashram dharma come in? He says, atak pumbir dvidashreshta varnashrama vibhagasha. The same words used here. Guna karma vibhagasha. According to the visions of guna of varna and ashram. Sonustitasya dharmasya. Practicing this dharma very nicely. Suanustitasya. All your duties as a brahman, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. The sangsid here, the perfection is haditoshanam, the satisfaction of Hari. So we're back to devotional service, you see. So that's what we call daivi varnashram. All of the varnas and the ashrams, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, the meaning of them, the purpose of them, the creator is Krishna. So he should know the purpose. The purpose is to awaken and perfect devotion to Krishna. You see? And so that's where varnashram comes in. So Krishna is explaining that. And, you know, the whole purpose, you know, Prabhupada points that out, that just becoming a Brahman is not enough if all you know is Brahman. A real Brahman knows the supreme Brahman who is mentioned here. In the, you know, Arjuna certifies, oh, that's you, Krishna. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam, Bhavan. Bhavan means you. Oh, Krishna, you are, I realize now, you are the supreme Brahman, completely pure, perfect, and all these other adjectives. So if we want to be real Brahmins, we have to be Vaishnavas. A real Vaishnava is automatically a Brahman, because he knows the supreme Brahman. And the qualities of the Brahman, samo namas tapakshaucham, self-control, control of the mind, senses, cleanliness, religiousness, humility, mercy, all of these qualities of the Vaishnava are really the quality, genuine qualities of the Brahman. So Prabhupada wanted us to cultivate these brahminical qualities. He wanted to create a society of Brahmins because we're meant to teach. We're meant to propagate this science for the benefit of humanity. That's what a real Vaishnava does. He feels the need to become Krishna conscious and to give Krishna consciousness. Okay, any questions on Chaturvanya Maya Sushna? This is where Krishna mentions Varnashram. Okay, moving along. Namam karmani limpanti. Namam karmani limpanti. Name karma palespiha. Name karma palespiha. Itimam yo bijanati. Karma bir nasabadyate. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action. One who understands this truth about me also does not become entangled in the fruit of reactions of work. Purport. As there are constitutional laws in the material world stating that the king can do no wrong, or that the king is not subject to the state laws, similarly the Lord, although he is the creator of this material world, is not affected by the activities of the material world. He creates and remains aloof from the creation, whereas the living entities are entangled in the fruitive results of material activities because of their propensity for lording it over material resources. The proprietor of an establishment is not responsible for the right and wrong activities of the workers, but the workers are themselves responsible. The living entities are engaged in their respective activities of sense gratification, and these activities are not ordained by the Lord. For advancement of sense gratification, the living entities are engaged in the work of this world, and they aspire to heavenly happiness after death. The Lord, being full in himself, has no attraction for so-called heavenly happiness. The heavenly demigods are only his engaged servants. The proprietor never desires the low-grade happiness such as the workers may desire. He is aloof from the material actions and reactions. For example, the rains are not responsible for different types of vegetation that appear on the earth, although without such rains, there is no possibility of vegetative growth. Vedic Smriti confirms this fact as follows. Nimitta matram evaso srijyanam sarga karmani pradhana karani bhuta yato vai srijya shaktayaha. In the material creations, the Lord is only the supreme cause. The immediate cause is material nature, by which the cosmic manifestation is made visible. The created beings are of many varieties, such as the demigods, human beings, and lower animals, and all of them are subject to the reactions of their past good or bad activities. The Lord only gives them the proper facilities for such activities and the regulations of the modes of nature. But he is never responsible for their past and present activities. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.134, it is confirmed, Vaishamya nair grinye na sapik shatvat. The Lord is never partial to any living entity. The living entity is responsible for his own acts. The Lord only gives him facilities through the agency of material nature, the external energy. Anyone who is fully conversant with all the intricacies of this law of karma, or fruit of activities, does not become affected by the results of his activities. In other words, the person who understands this transcendental nature of the Lord is an experienced man in Krishna consciousness, and thus he is never subjected to the laws of karma. One who does not know the transcendental nature of the Lord, and who thinks that the activities of the Lord are aimed at fruit of results, as are the activities of the ordinary living entities, certainly becomes entangled himself in fruitive reactions. But one who knows the supreme truth is a liberated soul fixed in Krishna consciousness. So, this is an important point. Krishna may seem to do all kinds of work when he comes to this world, but he's not entangled in anything. He's not affected by it, because he's the master, just like the a governor goes to the jail or something, you know. He looks like he's visiting the prisoners or something, but he's not really in prison. The foolish prisoner is saying, oh, now the governor's come to the jail. He's in jail. He's in the jailhouse, but he's not in jail like they are. You understand? So Krishna's activities are always in this mood. Everything is completely by his sweet will. He only comes here for us. He doesn't come here because he needs anything. We, on the other hand, are forced to repeatedly take birth because of our illusory disconnection from him. So we're connected to this energy, and we're entangled, completely entangled, in the food of results. We're longing for all kinds of food of results, and those longings, those desires, are manifold within the heart, thousands and thousands of some that we're aware of, some that are dormant. Just like a child grows up, what do they know of sex life? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, boom, there's a desire suddenly comes. Where did it come from? Well, it was there, but it was dormant. When the conditions are right, it manifests. Right? So that's an entanglement. Krishna has none of that. You know? He's completely here on his own will. And one who understands that about Krishna and becomes Krishna conscious can also attain to that state where we have nothing to gain from this world. The other day we were in Walmart. Right? We went to pick up some glasses for Dr. John here. So I'm standing in Walmart and we finished getting glasses. Then I'm thinking, do I need anything? You know, because there you are in Walmart. You know, that suffices for like a heavenly planet, you know, in this world. Well, everything is there that I need and it's cheap. Cheaper anyway. So, and I was thinking, no, I don't need anything. You know, the whole idea of these places, they suck you in. And then you go down the aisles, you know, and say, oh, I need this, I need that. I didn't know I needed it. Now they say, oh, I really want that, I want that, I want that, right? And you end up with a big shopping cart. Isn't that? That's the science of shopping, of creating shopping malls and big buildings, you know. But it was a great opulence, really, to be in the middle of Walmart and say, I don't need a darn thing. That they can't give me anything. So that, you see the freedom of that. There's a freedom in not wanting anything in this material world. Or the less you need, the less you feel you need, the freer you are. As that great sage said, when you have nothing to lose. Right? Bob Dylan. So, but there's a truth to it, you know? But it's not so much what you have, it's what you want that is the binding force. Suppose I have $10 million. Well, that sounds like, that's great. Well, I wish I could have $10 million. But what if that guy who has $10 million, you know, he's moving in circles where people have $100 million. He's a poor guy, you know. $10 million, you can't even lead a decent life with that. I got $100 million in billions, you know. So then he feels bad. He doesn't have what he needs, right? But then you have some poor, simple farmer, Vaishnava farmer, you know, living in Bengal somewhere, living peacefully at home, worshiping the deity, you know, morning and evening, kirtan. He's happy. In fact, they've done a study. You know the place, they do these studies where the happiness quotient of the people. The United States is way down at the bottom. Bangladesh, of all places. They found most people have a higher happiness quotient there than any other country in the world. Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries in the world, right? You know, and periodically you hear about these, what do they call them, typhoons that come in, you know. But in general, people lead a peaceful life, you know, they're satisfied, whatever. So how much more satisfied if you're really a pure Vaishnava? You don't want anything, you've got everything. Just look at the Goswamis, you know. They're perfect examples, you know. We have so many nice examples. But especially the rich ones who came from wealth, Rupa, Sanatana, and Raghunath, extremely wealthy by those standards, even today's standards. A boatload of gold, you know how much that would be worth today? $1 billion. And he gave it up completely. He divided it in, what, four? Or three sections? Three or four. Half he gave to the Brahmins, Vaishnavas. A quarter he gave to his family, you know, so they'll be satisfied. And a quarter he kept for emergency, which was then used to purchase the freedom of his brother, Sanatana. So they went to Vrindavan. They had nothing material. Little loincloth, no home. They lived under a tree, begged little madukari, you know. But they were the richest. Gopi bhavara samatabda lahadi kalala magnomohor. One line from, you know. They were surfacing and floating in the nectar ocean of the love of the gopis for Krishna. And that, you know, that's the highest stage of devotional service. But it's pure bliss. So who's richer? Who's more wealthy? You know, these anxious millionaires and billionaires. What's going to happen? I have to spend $1 million, so many millions on security. They're going to kidnap my wife and kid. You see the problem. You live simply. But your real wealth is coming from within. So, that's Krishna. Krishna is the original Rasika. He's the Rasika Shekhar. He's the one who's enjoying all this bhakti rasa, engagement with his devotees. That's the wealth. He has nothing to gain here. The only reason he comes is to reinstitute the Dharma, to preach Bhagavad Gita, to enact his Leela so that his devotees can remember them and chant them and hear about them. You know? That's why he comes periodically out of his compassion. So if you know that about Krishna, how wonderful it is that we have some connection from the chant his name. Who can be more merciful? Says Uddhava. Right? Here's the standard. Aho bhagiyam stanakala kutam jagansyapyapyasadvi. He says, here's Putana. You know the story of Putana. Krishna's a little baby, you know, in the cradle, you know, lying here. And here comes this demoness who's been deputed by Kansa, the big demon, to kill all the babies. She's a baby killer. You know, this is a horrible person. But she's a rakshasi. They have powers. And so she's, you know, shape-shifting, right? And she's so shaped into this beautiful goddess-like form, you know. And who, you know, there's a certain power to beauty, you know. You give way. So you showed in the others, oh, here comes the goddess of fortune coming to see Krishna. So she comes in there and into the room, and she's got this powerful poison on her breast, and she's suckling Krishna. So Krishna suckles the breast, but he also sucks out her life, you know. So it's painful for a moment, but, you know, she has a horrible screaming death, you know, shows her true witch-like form. But what happened to her? That's just the body. Then the soul went back to Godhead. She gets to the spiritual world, and she gets a position as a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, Uddhava says, who am I going to search out who's more merciful than that? If someone just looks at us cross-eyed or gives an insult, you know, that for the next 6 months, we have a grudge against them. And here's someone who tried to kill him, and he blessed her with the highest benediction. So who are you going to find who's more merciful? Who else should I take shelter of, says Uddhava. We should have that understanding. Krishna is so patient, you know. We're such nonsense. We're trying to chant, you know, and often do some nonsense. And then again, he lets us chant the holy name. It's a blessing. As long as you can chant, you can still hold on to that rope. But you have to be moving toward chanting offenselessly. If you're not, then there'll come the day when you don't think you need to chant, and that's boring, I'll do something else. That's Krishna. Withdrawing your impetus to chant his holy name, which is the only shelter in this world. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. So, maybe we've gone far afield here. But the idea is that Krishna is Atma Rama, he's completely self-satisfied. We can also be like that. That's our natural state. If we understand him, serve him, and become fully Krishna conscious. Any further discussion on this particular verse? Okay, moving along in the fourth chapter. Evam gyatva kritam karma purvair api mumukshabihi. Anyone want to chant? I'll try the line. Evam gyatva kritam karma purvair api mumukshabihi. Kuru karmaiva tasmatvam purvair purvataram kritam. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in their footsteps. Purport. There are two classes of men. Some of them are full of polluted material things within their hearts, and some of them are materially free. Krishna consciousness is equally beneficial for both of these persons. Those who are full of dirty things can take to the line of Krishna consciousness for a gradual cleansing process following the regulative principles of devotional service. Those who are already cleansed of the impurities may continue to act in the same Krishna consciousness so that others may follow their exemplary activities and thereby be benefited. Foolish persons or neophytes in Krishna consciousness often want to retire from activities without having knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna's desire to retire from activities on the battlefield was not approved by the Lord. One need only know how to act. To retire from the activities of Krishna consciousness and to sit aloof, making a show of Krishna consciousness, is less important than actually engaging in the field of activities for the sake of Krishna. Arjuna is here advised to act in Krishna consciousness following in the footsteps of the Lord's previous disciples, such as the sun god Vibhasvan, as mentioned herein before in the first verse of the chapter. The Supreme Lord knows all his past activities as well as those of persons who acted in Krishna consciousness in the past. Therefore, he recommends the acts of the sun god, who learned this art from the Lord some millions of years before. All such students of Lord Krishna are mentioned here as past liberated persons engaged in the discharge of the duties allotted by Krishna. So much of Krishna consciousness. First of all, it's 180 degrees different from the ordinary course of activities. And this is why it's almost like black and white. In the second chapter, Krishna says, those who are self-controlled devotees, their night is the materialist day and vice versa. You know, which means that it's a strange thing we're doing here. And that's why people aren't flooding in here, because what do you get out of it? You know, they don't see the benefit. But we see the benefit, and we can see the madness of the materialistic life. Right? We understand that. Nunam Pramatta Kuru Devikarma. We take our cue from the Shastra. Rishabdev, he's an incarnation of Krishna. He says, certainly, a life of sense gratification is mad, Pramatta, and the people who act in that way perform Vikarma, horrible activities, which just brings another body in suffering. So there are two, as Prabhupada says here, there are two kind of people. There are those who are hearts are full of material desire, dirty things, 99.9% of the people. And then those who are somewhat cleansed to varying degrees. So the process is the same for both. If one begins this process, then you'll become cleansed. And when you're already cleansed, then you come into the higher levels of realization. More and more enthusiasm, more and more happiness, more and more bliss, and less suffering, less and less attachment. So Krishna consciousness is the process for both. And one has to act. The idea, the whole idea is acting in knowledge. That's what this whole chapter is about. How to act in knowledge. And activity means of the senses and the mind and the, you know, intelligence. But chiefly, you have to do something. We have to be patient. We have to be enthusiastic and also determined and also patient in our progress in devotional service. Because it's a narrow, you know, straight is the gate, it says in the Bible, right? It means that it's thin. Here we call it a razor's edge. You can easily make mistakes. And so we have to follow in the path that's been set up. It's called the marga, bhakti marga. It's nicely said, because it's mysterious. It's a mystery, this thing. So they said, Tarko Patishta Shuti Yavabhinna Nasa Vrishi Yasamatam Nabhinnam. dharma sitam nihitam gohaya mahajano yena katasapanta. So to try to figure out these things on one's own, it's impossible. By arguing back and forth, you'll never get it. You know, tarko apatishta. And the Shrutis themselves, even the Vedas, if you study on your own, they seem to contradict. Some, you know, you'll find the Shiva Purana talks, exalts Shiva, you know, and this Upanishad, the impersonal Brahman. If you try to just pick it off the shelf in the library and go home and study. I tried it. I didn't know what to do. I had a little Buddhism over there. I had some Upanishads over here. I had my little Penguin Gita. It was about 150 pages long over there. And then I looked at it, and I don't know what to do. I was doing a little hatha yoga. That was basically until I met the devotees. So then it says, dharma sitattam nihidogumhayam. That the secret of all of this, dharma, back to the dharma, you know, is within the hearts of the realized soul, the Mahajans. Mahajans are those who know, and they have vijnan, they have realization. They've experienced these things. All these, you know, these worlds, these visions, that by their pure vision and their pure heart, they have direct experience. And they can show us. So therefore, Mahajano yena gata sapanta. Following in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Srila Prabhupada is our great Mahajan. It just means a great soul. You know, there are 12 main ones, but it just means great soul. So we can follow in the footsteps. So Prabhupada showed us. Yes, chant Hare Krishna. Okay, I'll chant Hare Krishna. And then he shows, we sing every morning. Sri Vigrahara Dhananityanana Shringara Tanmandirama. Oh, he decorates the temple, cleansing the temple. You know, Prabhupada literally got off the Vyasasana, got down on his hands and knees way back in 1970 in L.A. Showed this is how you mop a floor. You know, how much did he show with cooking? You know, the great cooks in his movement, you know, the early days, they learned that looking at Prabhupada taught them. All of this was taught. You know, so that's the panta, that's a path. That's how we learn. And then you have to follow those who follow. You know, it's otherwise the science as it is becomes lost. So luckily we have these books, and we have this institution, and there are so many established rules and regulations and practices. You know, doing it's like learn the Madanga, which unfortunately I'll never do in this lifetime. I don't think, but there's you know mantras. It's this great passage. I recommend this book by Mukunda Maharaj. What is it called? Matchless Miracle on Second Avenue. Where he was the first one to learn the Madanga. You know, Prabhupada, he showed him, here's the mantras. He's taking the time. Prabhupada is sitting there for half an hour with him. And then he's doing, you know, he's a musician anyway, so he's kidding. And Prabhupada's behind him, and he didn't even know he was there. And he looks, and Prabhupada is smiling because, you know, his student is passing on the science, you know. It's just, everything is the right way and the wrong way for pleasing Krishna. We talked to Giriraj Gopal about how important the Madanga playing is, you know, for pleasing Krishna. It's all for pleasing Krishna. Then you become pleased. Okay, any final comments or questions? Sorry. I kind of went on and on again. All right, we'll resume again on Monday. Tomorrow we'll have the lounge program. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.